You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-hosts, Vanana.
Hello.
And Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to episode 127 of the Fanboy Garage. We hope you guys had a very, very good Happy New Year. Welcome 2021. This is the first episode of the new year. Hopefully it'll be the bomb episode. I don't know. It's funny. Everyone's like, oh, 2020 is over. Like, it's all over. No, days are still ticking by. Yeah. Things are still happening, but we did get some goodies. Cobra Kai finally dropped season 3. We're very excited about that. And what else are we talking about? There's a whole bunch of other stuff.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we're gonna give you guys just a happy go lucky episode.
Yeah. So I watched Cobra Kai in one sitting.
Wait, the whole thing?
Yeah, the season 3. Yeah, I didn't get up. I didn't. Well, I mean, I may have gotten up, but I didn't take a break. I didn't watch it like in blocks of episodes. I just sat and watched them all in one sitting. Mm. So it's on Netflix now. For those of you who don't know, and I guess one of the perks of being on Netflix is the fact that the episodes were a little longer, not much, not incredibly longer, but like probably about 5 minutes or so on average longer. The last episode was actually even a little longer than that. Mm. And the very beginning, I was like, I don't know about this.
Yeah.
It took a couple of episodes for me to kind of, for the season to hit its stride.
Episode four.
Yeah, that's probably about right. And then it just takes off. And yeah. I just loved it. And I just, you know, the writing on this show is so great because it's just dripping with nostalgia, right? And this season, I think even more so than in previous seasons, because there's a lot of like fan service here. There's a lot of like, you know, throwbacks to like stuff, especially, you know, Karate Kid Part 2 and all of that. Yeah. It's just oozing nostalgia and callbacks to the movies. But it's done in a way where it's relevant to this show. And even though Cobra Kai walks a very fine line between corny and legit, I guess is the best way I could put it. Cause it's goofy at times, especially this season. But it never gets to the point where it takes you out of the show. Right. And you're like, well, this is just a farce now. It still kind of brings it back. And I thought it took a little bit long to get like the kids more involved. Mm-hmm. It was just another great season, and it leaves you just on a cliffhanger, kind of.
Oh, craving for more?
Yeah, crave. And they did announce there will be a fourth season, so.
All right.
Yeah. This is one of my favorite shows on television.
Vanessa, I know you have not seen Are you a fan of Karate Kid?
Yes.
All right. What are you waiting for? What's going on?
Well,
I know you've been watching a lot of stuff.
I have watched more TV in my life this year or last year in 2020 than I have in my entire life. Alex and I were watching a lot of shows. He has no interest in Cobra Kai, and I feel like us being together every single day, you know, when you're quarantined with your partner or just stuck together working at home, you kind of just end up watching the same shows and you're like, what do you want to watch? Oh, let's watch this. We did start watching a new show, which I'll tell you guys later what it is. But now I'm here in New York. He went back to Texas. He's driving on the road right now. So I will definitely be checking it out. I have a lot of time, so I'm sure I will be caught up to you guys in no time.
All right. I mean, they are quick. They're pretty quick fire episodes. And I think once you watch episode one, you're going to get hooked.
Yeah.
Cause I remember like going like, Cobra Kai, and I got YouTube Red, whatever it was called. watched it and thought maybe the first 5 minutes of this, I'm like, what the heck is this? And then all of a sudden it's like, I'm hook, line, and sinker. I'm like, oh shit, gotta get to the next one, next one, next one, next one. And then it's done. This one we're taking our time with. I am halfway through. It's a short season, right?
So
are they 10 episodes?
10. Okay, yeah.
Okay, so it's 10 episodes. Are they like 30-minute episodes?
Yeah, for the most part. The first two seasons are actually probably just under 30 minutes. This season is a little longer. Their episodes are more like 35 minutes. I think the finale is like 40 something minutes.
Yeah.
A little bit more room to breathe. Not, you know, not incredibly longer, but a little bit more room to breathe, I guess, because of Netflix.
Yeah.
But it goes by quick. I mean, they're not, this is not a very like dense show where that's why like you could watch it in like one sitting. The episodes are fast. They're kind of breeze by. There's a story and there's a lot of story to it. I don't want to like undersell it in that sense, but like, it's not a show that's just like overly dense and difficult to,
I'll say it like this. And this is the thing that drew me to Cobra Kai, was that we get so wrapped up in the hero's story and the hero's journey. And there's destruction in that journey. Like, there was somebody who at one point thought they were the alpha, and then that person gets displaced by Daniel LaRusso, right? What happens in the wake of that moment? Like, in all those people's lives where he is now thrust into the limelight, he's, you know, he's got the best sensei, and, you know, he's now, you know, leading the Miyagi-Do, you know, karate. Well, what happened to the people that were at the top before? And that's kind of like that moment, while it defines Daniel LaRusso's life for the rest of the movies that we've seen, not the fourth one with Hilary Swank, horrible. We now see how it defined Johnny's life after he loses.
Technically both of their lives though too, right?
Yeah, I mean, because right, so he becomes the winner and Johnny is the loser, and you know, and it kind of makes you think, oh, I actually kind of feel bad for Johnny now. Like, you were such a dick when you were a kid, but now you start to understand how and why he operated the way he did, and why Cobra Kai was so important to him, and he's trying to find his place in life now that he's at the bottom, while, you know, Daniel LaRusso is Mr. Popular and all of that shit. It's some really, really
and
cool stuff.
There's a moment in this season, and this isn't a big spoiler, right? So I'm not really going to give, this isn't going to really give anything away, but there's a moment where like Miguel, who's one of the, he's like one of the main characters, like as far as the new cast goes.
Yeah.
He's talking to Daniel and he's like, wait a minute, like, you're from Reseda? Because he's from Reseda, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. He goes, wait. He goes, so you're from Reseda and Johnny was the rich kid in like high school? Like, and he's like, yeah. And it's just like, it blows his mind, because obviously if you watch this show, like, and you didn't really know about the movies, you wouldn't even realize that, like, because their roles have reversed in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
As far as that goes. And it's fascinating.
It's like that Drake song. It's like, started from the bottom, now we here.
There you go.
That's kind of how it
and
is, it, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a moment, like, in this season where Sam asks her father, like, I thought we were the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a nice little spin on this idea of like, you've earned your way up to the top. Now that you're on the top, you're giving the things privilege to your kids, and now they are being viewed a certain way, as if they've not come, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're now they're looking at them, other kids are looking at them as the privileged kids, and that just kind of throws a nice little wrench into how people interact with each other. I think it's good stuff. Makes me think about how I raise my kids too.
And the other thing too is, and I won't get into the spoilery stuff because I don't even realize, like, you're 5 episodes in, Aaron.
Yeah, dude, there's
so much.
I'm not
sure where you're at. Yeah, and I know, Vanetta, you haven't watched it yet. But just as a general concept, what I love too about the show is that it has added to the mythology of the movies.
Yeah.
Like, you never really looked at, like, the Karate Kid series as this series that was just, like, steeped in mythology, right? It's not that kind of thing. But, like, they've added a lot. Like, they've added things to, like, Mr. Miyagi and his legacy and who he was as a person and his kind of origins in a way. And they do get into a lot of, like what you were just talking about, like, well, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? And, like there's a theme this season about, like, Miyagi-Do karate versus Cobra Kai and, like, what the differences are and how, like, the principle of, at least what Daniel was taught, the principle of Miyagi-Do karate was to just be, it's self-defense. It's about playing defense, right? It's not about attack. It's not about offense. And, like, that, there's a storyline involving that and how, like, Miyagi-Do, where it started from and things like that. And that's really cool. Like, because, I mean, The Karate Kid was this, like, you know, it's a cute movie, right? Like a kind of a coming of age story about overcoming the bully and, you know,
thanks to martial arts.
Exactly. And that's another thing too. That's cool. Especially in this season, like karate has actually become like this thing in the Valley where it's like the Valley is consumed by karate.
Yeah.
Like there's even like a line in the thing. It's like, why is everyone in this Valley so obsessed with karate?
Yeah.
And like, even in the beginning of the season, like there's a kind of a line where it's like, I thought people were over karate. Like, you know, it's kind of cool. Cause like karate is like in the '80s, karate was like a big deal, even though all of the movies that inspired people to love martial arts were not karate. It was kung fu, right? It was the Shaw Brothers and it was Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan. None of them were doing karate, right? They were all kung fu or variations on Chinese martial arts, right? Karate is a Japanese martial art.
Right.
But yet karate somehow was the karate dojos were the things that emerged, right? Wing Chun and kung fu dojos were not huge in the '80s. It was karate dojos that somehow became the thing. And that's because
thanks to Tiger Stillman.
Well, because karate became the generic term, just like how we call like every cotton swab is a Q-tip or tissues or Kleenex and things like that. Like the brand karate became the term for martial arts. Like everybody just, oh, you're a karate guy. Oh, that's a karate movie. Oh, they're doing karate. It didn't matter what you were doing. Everybody did karate. But in the '80s, I mean, with Karate Kid, like, karate became this huge, big mainstream thing. And then it, you know, it, like a lot of traditional martial arts, with the rise of MMA, in this country and around the world, like they have struggled, you know, the traditional martial arts, with the exception of maybe Taekwondo because of its appeal toward little kids. Yeah. Traditional martial arts have struggled in this country now, and we don't look at them the same way. Right. And but it's fun to kind of look back and, you know, kind of throw back to a time when like having the gi and the you know, even the wearing the bandana on your head and all that stuff or the belt around your head, like all that stuff was cool. And ninjas, of course. And
everyone loves ninjas.
Everyone loves ninjas. So that's another fun aspect to, you know, to the show as well. It is self-aware in ways, but it doesn't beat you over the head with it. Like it's winking at you in a way. Like it's self-aware, but the characters themselves aren't necessarily self-aware.
That your explanation of it really makes me want to watch it more, because I was kind of under the impression, just without like no basis for this at all, but I was kind of under the impression that they just took, you know, certain characters as a concept and made a spin-off and made a completely different show. But it's nice to hear that they are explaining deeper concepts or bringing things back or showing more of the principles and things like that. So that sounds really exciting. There's some,
I mean, it's funny because I think a lot of shows fall trap to that. Like they use the brand to kind of create something else. And it is very much that, but it is also focused, at least the first season is focused primarily on Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
And his life and how he tries to bring Cobra Kai back. And he does, right, with some success. And then, you know, fast forward to season two, and it's how he changes the fundamentals of Cobra Kai, right? Because I think when you've watched Karate Kid, Cobra Kai was like the badass kids, you know, their instructor, their sensei, was all about sweep the leg, and you know, it was all this bad shit. And I don't want to spoil anything here, but he rethinks some of those fundamentals and the foundations from where it came.
Yeah,
to create something else. And that's it's a lot of fun to see him kind of do that, and where that ultimately goes.
Yes,
it's a really, really good show. So like I said, I think I just wrapped episode 4 maybe or 5 where he goes to Japan.
Ross, I wasn't sure if you had gotten that far.
Yeah, yet, so I'm there, yeah. And so the acting is pretty shitty.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty shitty.
I'm like, Ralph Macchio, it's been a while, dude. Not too good. But there was a point where I was like, oh shit, I'm getting choked up. Like, because the other actress on the other side of this conversation was bringing the heat.
Yeah.
And I was like, and you know, this
just, I mean, like, look, Ralph Macchio sucks. Ralph Macchio, he was never great. I mean, you know, Ralph Macchio wasn't a great actor in Karate Kid.
He's just been drinking from the fountain of youth.
Yeah, he doesn't age. That's his thing.
The dude is not old.
No. He was old.
Aging on pause.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is,
he was like 23 when he filmed.
Yeah, he was way older when he made The Karate Kid, and still you wouldn't have known it.
The dude is near, Vanana, the dude is like 60 years old.
Well, I've met him in person.
Oh, shit.
In like 2018 at the Soho Film Festival.
What?
He was like with a friend of mine, and I was like, that's, and she's like, yeah, come. She's like, come meet him. He's in a new show called like Cobra Kai. And I was like, oh, okay, great. And he looks phenomenal in person.
He's 50. He just turned 59 a couple months ago.
I have a picture of him with him. He's maybe about like just this much taller.
He's from Long Island.
And I don't think I was wearing heels. I think I was wearing flats. Yeah. Is he from Long Island?
Yeah, he's from Huntington.
He's
He's really, really nice.
Yeah.
Wow. And no ounce of like just really humble, just the down to earth, you know. A lot of people were coming up to him taking pictures. That's and awesome. And he
like
was
he's
just
from Reseda.
Yeah, like he was just so cool about it.
Yeah, I mean, he's 59 years old and he still looks like, I mean, it's,
yo,
I wonder what the secret is.
He
the secret.
I mean, I was just watching my cousin Vinny today, right? It was on TV. That movie came out in 92. He looks the same as he did in that movie. Like he, for the most part. I mean, and that's, you know, that's almost 30 years ago that movie was made.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's insanity.
Genetics.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. Crazy.
Seriously. Everyone else is aged around. Oh, and the other guy that plays Kreese. That's another dude.
Yeah, he does
great. He's 74.
He's still in great shape. And
that's the funny thing. I'm like, and then he's only 15 years older than Ralph Macchio. And Justin's like, wait, like that doesn't. So what? So he could be 15. I'm like, you don't understand what this is doing to my brain. Like he's only 15 years older than Ralph Macchio. He looks like an old man, but Ralph Macchio looks like he's like in his 40s.
Yeah, but the difference is though. But he looks good though. For 74.
Oh, yeah, he does for 74.
It's just Ralph Macchio looks like he's 20.
Yeah, it blows my mind.
Yeah.
I got to get what they're getting.
No, yeah.
That's funny.
Botox, bitches. No.
Yeah. So, well, that might be part of it, but.
Botox.
Yeah. I got to get rid of this, for those of you, this like little bulldog wrinkle I've had.
Oh, my God.
All around my.
What? You stop that right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Winkle scar thing. Anyway.
So everyone should watch Cobra Kai. Now there's no excuse because it's on Netflix. I get before you didn't want to pay for the YouTube service or you didn't want to get a free trial and risk activating
use that $17.99 that Netflix is pulling
you're still
up from your blood.
Bitter about that, huh?
I'm so mad about that, dude. I'm so mad. I mean, how did they think about that for a second?
I'm actually considering dropping Netflix. Now that I got rid of Cobra Kai, like there's nothing on Netflix right now that I'll be watching. And
I wish I could.
I rarely watch it. I'm actually thinking about giving it a few months off just to see if I miss it at all.
Yeah. I totally wish I could. But my daughter loves Netflix.
But yeah, she could probably love something else, right? I mean,
you know, dude, she asks for Netflix like all the time.
What does she watch on it?
The dumbest shit, bro. Okay. Oh my God, holy! There's a show called Fearless. There's a movie called Fearless, and it was like representation, blah blah blah, film, right? Because it's like a black superhero, whatever. So I'm like, I'm watching this, and I'm hearing one of the hero's voices. I'm like, that voice sounds familiar. I'm like, who is that? It's Jada Kiss from The Locks, voicing a superhero with the voice like that. For anyone who knows who Jada Kiss is, like, I'm sorry, but like that's the voice that was coming through the TV, and I looked at my daughter, and I was like, keep on watching it, baby girl, right? So she finished, and I thumbs downed it. I was like, I don't want her watching that shit again.
Because
it was bad. It was really
bad.
But
you can't get her to just love Disney Plus, though, or something like
that? No, man. I don't know what it is. Like, I think Netflix has some brainwave stuff there. They put, like, the dumbest shit TV, streaming movies, whatever, on there. And she gets sucked into it. There's shows called, like, you know what it is, too? It's the international, like, the distribution of stuff, like, mm-hmm. So she sees these things, like, it's called Grizzly and the Lemmings, and it's a French show, and it's actually kind of funny. No voices. It's basically a grizzly bear versus a bunch of lemmings every episode. It's like slapstick comedy, and it is pretty funny, and like she watches that, but I think that's what it is. I think there's just so much, it just puts it all out there where, like, I feel that's... like Disney Plus is very, it's a little different. Like, the interface is, like, more organized, and I don't know if my daughter's brain is as organized as I
Yeah, like, Disney Plus, Netflix makes it easy to just fall into things.
Exactly.
But Netflix also gives you, like, that preview. So sometimes you don't know what a show is about, but it will just automatically start playing.
It just plays it for you. That's right.
And I'm sure with all the kids shows,
locks
like,
her right.
Like, they want to know what happens next. Where in Disney Plus, you just see the picture and that's it.
It might move, but there isn't really a trailer that plays behind it. You're 100% right, because you don't know how many times we'll be on something and then it'll play, and she'll be like, "Oh, I want to watch that." I'm like, "No."
Well,
you take that somewhere else.
I mean, they might be hemorrhaging money, but that's why they have 195 million subscribers or whatever it is that they have now. Because, you know, despite their, they might eventually price themselves out, especially as they start to lose content. Because now you're starting to see them with the content that they're losing. Like, I know there are a lot of people that are unhappy that The Office is officially not on Netflix anymore. Now, it's now exclusive to Peacock. And The Office and Friends were the two most watched. And Star Trek were the three most watched, like, catalog shows on Netflix. Mm-hmm. You know, not original stuff. And they've lost all three of those. You know, they lost Friends, they lost The Office, and HBO, and the Star Trek stuff's all over the place now, but obviously CBS All Access is the go-to for that. So, you know, that you're starting to feel that. The Marvel stuff, the Disney stuff, eventually you're going to start to feel that.
Yeah.
And, you know, after a while, it's going to get to a point where it's like, it's going to be a lot of original content, and a lot of their original content is pretty terrible. But aside from that, like, are you going to pay 17 or 18 bucks or whatever for just like mostly original content? I think they're going to have to start to figure some things out, because they can't be pumping the money into their original content that they're pumping and still try to compete for like catalog shows and legacy shows.
The other thing I wonder is, so for the films that they're acquiring, the international films that they're acquiring that might be dubbed in other languages, are they hiring the actors to redub those things? So
I don't think so.
And it's like, no.
No.
Because there's a movie, it's called Animal Crackers, and I know it was made for Chinese audiences, and it's on Netflix, but so it's a Netflix film, right? It's got the Netflix, but they've got like Emily Blunt. They've got, what's his name? Who's her husband again?
John Krasinski.
Him. Danny DeVito.
They're dubbing the voices.
That are dubbing the voices for these characters.
So what I think happens is you as the production company, not as a distributor. Netflix would be considered the distributor. You as a production company would have those different versions lined up for what markets you want to sell to.
Yeah, but so what I'm saying is, if that movie, where would that movie have popped up? Like in Chinese theaters?
So it was, so here's the, I'm just looking at it now. So the movie, it's considered an American and Chinese co-production. A lot of studios, though, were involved in the production. Blue Dream Studios, Mayday Movie Productions, a Chinese investment company, China Film Group Corporation. So it was like there was like six different production studios. Netflix is the distributor, like Vanana said. So those production, the studios, I would assume the studio that was responsible for the like American production portion of it would be the ones that would be responsible for hiring the Americans. It's the same thing that happens with like the Studio Ghibli films that get dubbed into English, or the Disney. I mean, when Disney took over the U.S. distribution of those films, like they started hiring like some of the voice actors to do the dubs, or when what was the other studio that was distributing their stuff in the U.S.? Like they're usually the ones that the production company themselves that acquires it or co-produces it usually
will do
the voice. Yeah,
because I know trying to put my stuff on Amazon Prime, which I still have to do the subtitling for, or like the closed captions, they ask you in their checklist if you have, if it's dubbed, if it's subtitled, or if it's closed caption. And what they, the standard, what they need is the closed caption for like the deaf and the hearing impaired.
Right.
But if you have a dubbed version, because when you put your own content on Amazon Prime, it, the markets are US, UK, and Japan. So you can do a dubbed version as well. Right. And you'll have to do it in, I guess, Japanese would be the only other thing because UK is English.
Right.
So you can dub it in Japanese if you want to appeal to that market who has Amazon Prime, which is interesting that those are the only three countries that are part of it when you're self, you're basically self-publishing. I never really looked into that, but I'll look into it and see why. Why isn't it other countries? Is it because they don't have Amazon Prime? They can't get it, or or you know, why Japan?
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at that. I'm just looking more into this movie now because it's interesting. It looks like it was actually written and cast as a English language film.
Oh.
And it got, there was a some like Chinese backing financially, but it was because it was written by a guy named Scott Christian Sava. Who wrote the screenplay, and he tried to sell it originally to studios, and they couldn't, nobody was taking it.
Yeah.
And then eventually got picked up, but the financing came from, a lot of it came from China.
Of course.
And then it was, he wrote it, but he, because he, it's saying here, Blue Dream Studios, which is affiliated with IDW apparently publishing, they were the ones who cast all the, he said, like, I had these actors in mind when I wrote the characters.
That's so crazy. That's
what is it? What's the movie called?
Animal Crackers. So this is not a traditional, this is not like a film that was an animated film like that was released overseas and brought here, and then they cast, you know, English speaking actors to do the US version of it. This seems like it was actually a movie that was written and produced here, but it was financed predominantly overseas.
And then maybe saw the light of day in theaters over there and went only streaming here, because that's never,
because it came out in 2017.
Oh, it did.
Yeah.
Apparently. Oh. Well.
Yeah.
But new to Netflix in 2020.
Yeah. Exactly. It was created. It looks like it. It was released. So it was released. In 2017 in the film festival circuit, and then it was released in China in 2018, and then released here in the United States in 2020, July of 2020. Spain, apparently, the U.S. and China all had a hand in financing the movie.
Wow.
And it's considered an English language film.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've never seen it.
It's so funny. Like,
that's cute.
We were, which the other movie that she's like in love with is Abominable, which mm-hmm. is set in China. Yeah. And everything in the movie is like literally like the whole scenes, everything is all in Chinese. And I was like, okay, this is, how did they do this? Like, I'm fascinated now about how these films are created and then marketed and then brought onto streaming services, because there are some things like the overlap of, like, again, the scenes being in Chinese and not all in English, or the setting of it being in a different country is so different. And my daughter is like, oh, where is that? I'm like, that's China. And she's like, whoa, I want to go there. And I'm like, whoa, we can't afford that now. Hold on. That's an international flight, girl. Chill out. Hold your horses. And I'll get you, you know, maybe Santa will bring you a abominable stuffed animal.
China's taking over Hollywood, man.
Yeah, I mean, so Tencent, a former client, actually the client that I was at Adweek for.
Oh, okay.
A couple of years ago. They have been financing movies left and right. Like, I'm almost positive that's the only reason why Terminator Dark Fate became a thing.
Yeah.
Is because it got money, and Arnold Schwarzenegger and the whole franchise probably makes bank in China.
Yeah.
So,
well, listen, yeah. We know, I mean, look, the Fast and the Furious franchise, yeah. I mean, they do more, they make more money in China than they do here.
Yeah.
I mean, not that they don't do well here, but, like, I mean, there it's like insane.
Yeah, it's a killing. It's
yeah.
A killing.
Now, does yeah. she, does your daughter, because this is certainly a conversation I did not expect to have on the show today, but while we're going with it, does she prefer, like, modern, like, computer animation to hand-drawn animation?
Yeah.
So if you tried to show her, like, the great stuff that's on, like, HBO Max, like, you know, like the Spirited Away and My Neighbor Totoro and all that stuff, like, she
maybe
won't get into
that. I'm gonna give it a shot. I think she so she's seen all the princess movies, you know, Cinderella, Snow White,
Little Mermaid, like all that stuff.
The older stuff has more of a frightening element to it. You know, like Sleeping Beauty.
Especially the stuff that was based on the Grimm. Like,
yeah, the Grimm stories, all of that.
Yeah.
Tangled is probably one that gets replayed a lot. I mean, believe me, I've seen Moana more times than I can count. Mm. And Coco. So, and like, she starts to dip more into the Pixar stuff. Like, she loves the Pixar stuff. But as like Moana's not Pixar, that's Disney animation, but Coco is like one that she watches all the time, and I'm cool with that because Coco.
Sure,
Coco is awesome.
God, dude, like,
I haven't seen Moana, but Coco is awesome.
Moana is a phenomenal movie.
I gotta watch it.
Husband is there, so
I watched. Yeah, that's true. I haven't seen that. I watched Soul.
I haven't finished it.
And right next to it, after we were done, it was Moana, and I was like, "Oh, I haven't seen that either." And now I feel like I'm in an animation mood. Soul was just—can I tell you guys? I cried at the end. Chris, did you cry?
I didn't. Well, I mentioned last week. Sorry, like it was. It dealt
you
with.
On the spot.
Oh, I have no. I cry at plenty of movies. I didn't cry during Soul, but I. It was dealing with a lot of things. That's what blew me away about it, was like that I'm dealing with, right, as a 44 year old man, like all these existential questions, and so like that stuff hit me. But it didn't strike me like that. I got emotional at points, like some of the like I said, the scene where he auditions for the band, like just kind of caught, like took my breath away a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's not like, I mean, the director was the same director that did Up, the beginning of Up destroyed me. So, like, I defy anybody to get through the beginning of Up without actually crying. So, like, after that, like, nothing in this movie brought me to that point, but.
Yeah, it wasn't, you're right, the crying the sobbing actually, like in Up, is totally different from the end. Like that's just like it's a wave that takes you over. Yeah. I think the end of this movie, you just get this like tingle all over your body, and it's just like, wow, that is so beautiful.
Yeah.
All right, stop. Don't ruin it for me, because I'm all in on Soul. Like, we were watching it. It was funny because I may have mentioned this, but I put it on for my daughter, and she just, it was so adult.
Yeah.
That she was like, what is this, daddy? And I was like, this feels like it's more for me, actually. So yeah. Sure, you can change it.
It gets more, like, as it goes on, it becomes a little bit more for, like, the kid. You can see where the kid hook is, but yeah, it takes a while.
It was funny because, well, like, Up, my daughter, we may have talked about this, but she was on Up all the time. Like, wanted to watch Up the time. And I was like, please, can we just skip 15 minutes into the film? Because, like, she's like, daddy, what's wrong? Or she'd start asking questions like, where did his mommy go? The woman, the girl with the missing tooth. And I was like, stop talking to
me. Yeah.
God damn it, he's gone.
Yeah.
Those movies, oh, man, they creep up. Like,
yeah.
I was washing dishes and she was watching Coco, and it was like the end of Coco, and like the scene where, you know, Miguel's playing the guitar for his great grandmother, and I started like, I heard it in my, like, my hair started like stand up, and I just started to get emotional, and I'm like, damn it, Coco, why? Why? I'm washing dishes, can you just leave me or remember me? And I'm like,
yeah, that's one thing the Disney princess movies never did.
No.
You know, they never did that.
No. I mean, Disney had its moments, like, you know, Dumbo has its moment, Bambi has its moment, mm-hmm. but like the princess stuff, not so much. Cause they were based on, you know, stories that weren't.
Get, you know, that bag.
But yeah.
Yeah.
That stuff started to come into play more, like, I mean, you did see it in, like, they tried it at the beginning of Finding Nemo has that moment.
Oh, geez. That, you know, part was tough.
Yeah, although you, the humor lays on like so thick in that that you forget like the sadness of the beginning, except the end then gets you again. Yeah. So that, you know, that's just fantastic stuff. But yeah, I mean, look, they're gonna have those moments when you're dealing with themes of, like, you know, parents and loss and or in this sense, like, trying to figure out your place in the world. I mean, you know, those are heavy themes that, like, as adults, I think it's gonna affect us more than it would even if you're a kid, especially the little kid, because you're more drawn to the animation and the music and the, you know, the stuff that's like over the top, right? So things that might be funny or silly or like, but, and the themes may not grab you as much. Like, to me, like Toy Story, I mean, like, that's two different movies depending on who's watching it, right? So the little kids love the toys.
It's another one we just watched.
You know, they love the characters. They like the, you know, that's they're watching it as like a Looney Tune almost in a sense. Whereas we're watching it as like, oh my God, this is my childhood. Like, in the themes of like giving up, having to grow up and, you know, getting like that stuff as an adult, you're like, it's affecting you very differently. So it's like one movie telling the same story, but it can affect different age groups. And that's the beauty of that stuff. Yeah. And that's why, actually, we can transition for a second into this, because, you know, I was thinking about this before. I was looking at Wonder Woman 84 and like some of the numbers, box office numbers, and looking at some HBO Max numbers and stuff. And I was thinking about like HBO Max versus Disney Plus. Not that, to compare the two in that sense, but like Disney Plus, because of some of the things that we just talked about, like, it's such a unique service because for a relatively small amount of money, right, you can have entertainment for the entire family. And there aren't a lot of streaming services that are like that. I mean, obviously we just talked about Netflix. Netflix just has so much content that, yes, you certainly can find something for everyone. But considering the fact that Disney Plus is focused on, like, there's no adult, quote unquote, there's no R-rated stuff, right? There's no horror, there's no any of that. It's all family friendly, but it still has stuff to appeal to like a broad age group. And that's probably why, like, it has whatever it is, 80 something million subscribers right now. HBO Max, 12.6 million activations right now, up from 8.6. The problem with that is, though, trying to figure out it. The reason why they say activations is because we don't know how many of those are actual unique subscribers to HBO Max. Like, included in that 12.6 million activations are people that already paid for HBO through their cable or satellite provider or through a streaming service or whatever. And you get, because HBO Max for them replaced HBO Go, right? It became the online, on the streaming on demand, you know, service for HBO. So we don't know how many of those people are, if any, are unique HBO Maxes. I mean, I know there's one, me. So, but I there's at least one, but I don't know how many of those 12.6 million activations are unique HBO subscribers, and they aren't releasing that number. And I'm just, I was thinking about it because I'm like, did HBO Max, we've spent so much time focused on what they're doing with their theatrical films, right? And whether that was a good decision to just put them on HBO Max at no additional cost. But I'm starting to think of whether HBO Max in general was a good idea. Like, as much as I love it and I loved it and the idea of it, it's like, wow, for the same price as HBO, I can get HBO and all of that extra stuff. That's great. But was it too good in a sense? Like, would they have been better off making it a standalone streaming service at a smaller, at a lower price point that just had the original content and, you know, eventually maybe some older HBO stuff over time? Because now you have 38 million people that have HBO already. And so that's a built-in audience, right? And what they did with AT&T, so AT&T people get it for free. And before everybody says, but wait a minute, Chris, Verizon customers get Disney Plus for free in some cases. Right. But the difference is Verizon and Disney are not the same company.
Right.
And I'm sure Verizon must be paying some type of a fee to Disney to be, offer that promotion. Disney is not just out of the kindness of their heart offering their streaming services for free to Verizon Unlimited customers, right? There's got to be a rights fee there. Some, they're making money on that. AT&T is the same company as HBO Max. They're offering that free thing just because they're, it's an incentive to keep customers with AT&T, and also it's a way to try to inflate the subscriber number or the activation numbers. It doesn't put any extra money in their pocket. It's all going into the same pot. So it's like they've doubled, they keep double dipping on HBO Max. Like, HBO subscribers get it for free, like get it already. AT&T customers get it already. And all of that money, though, is, it's $1 amount going into the same pot.
Right, right.
So I was just thinking about all this today, and I was just like, man, I don't know. Like, I want...
So they should have created a separate, a completely separate...
Maybe not. I mean, maybe if HBO Max eventually finds its footing and works. I'm just... I was thinking about it because I was watching Peacock, right? And because they have The Office now. And I was watching, you know, obviously we've been watching The Mandalorian and watching all this stuff. And it's like, you know, HBO Max does have some, will have more original content. But it's like, after these theatrical movies next year, like, aside from that and aside from like the Snyder Cut and all that stuff, like, yes, they are going to start ramping up original content. But I feel like that would have more value if it was its own thing.
I agree. Yeah. Or a paid thing.
Right. Right.
Like, I don't, it's funny. I'm an HBO Max subscriber and I don't really use it as often as I probably should.
I think once they start out with their own original content, like, it might be slow moving, but I feel like for HBO Max at a certain point, it can reach a point where they just all of a sudden get a lot of subscribers because they're trying to corner the streaming market.
Yeah. I mean, the only problem I have with the model is, though, like, Disney Plus right now, I think they have like 36 million or 38 million subscribers here in the US, right?
Right.
There's 38 million HBO subscribers already.
They're going to get their subscribers based on FOMO.
Maybe.
You know, I that's what I think.
So you think people are going to be like, oh my God, Wonder Woman 84. I got to get on that.
Yeah.
For the
yeah.
1 month. But there are going to be 1 month. So it's going to be like a spike. And then once that comes off, then people pull off.
Yeah, but this is just a start. You know, this is just the beginning. We just
when's
got
the next
one.
Release?
Well,
but
I guess my point is, though, there's already 38 million HBO and HBO Max subscribers in the U.S. and like 57 million globally.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say hypothetically, so there's 12.6 million HBO Max activations, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say that all of a sudden those 38 million subscribers, all of a sudden, all of them just said, I'm just going to watch HBO Max, right? And I'm going to not watch the TV version of HBO anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get 38 million HBO Max activations. It's the same money.
Right. Yeah.
Like, is there, because of the model that they chose to use, is there enough room for growth for them? Because they need to
add
on top of the 38 million that they already have.
They need
so,
new people.
Yeah, like, is there, I mean, I guess you could get another 10, 20 million subscribers in time,
that's what I'm saying. The new subscribers, I think what they're pushing now, this model that they're pushing now, all these, you know, will not make money now. We'll eat it now with the people that are activating or people that are, you know, AT&T subscribers, like cell phone service. We'll eat it now that we can't really make any money. But with the original content that's coming and all of these other deals and all of like the 2021 slate of movies, people are going to want to be on HBO Max to watch these movies if they're not going to the theaters. So I think eventually they're banking on the fact, and hey, it might not happen. It might not happen. It might be a failed experiment, but I think eventually they're banking on the fact that HBO Max is going to be something that you just have to get. Like, you can't resist it.
Right.
Or it becomes your movie ticket. That's exactly right. So my friend Phil said, he was talking about Wonder Woman 84, and he's like, you're gonna pay $14.99 for the month to have HBO Max when you would pay that for a movie ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I just hope you cancel.
Right. The only thing is, I'm just trying to figure out, like, if there's already 38 million or so HBO subscribers, right? And would they have been better? Could they have done better if they would have split it off and had an additional streaming service for $6-$7 a month? And you would still have had your 38 or 35 million or 30, whatever it is, HBO television subscribers or combination subscribers or whatever. And now you think if they would have gotten even 10 or 12 or 15 million unique subscribers to that lower price service, but they're new customers.
Yeah.
Like, it might have been a better way to do it from a financial perspective.
I agree with you. They could have done something where, like, they give you content a month in advance, like pretty much what they're doing now, right? We'll give you exclusive access to this new content a month in advance. Join this service, and then it'll just show up on cable, yeah, on HBO, on regular HBO. You know what I mean? So it almost becomes like the special. They could have charged more.
Or do you think they needed those 38 million subscribers to kind of grandfather over or like carry over, so that there are people actually talking about the service?
I think they try to use it to put themselves in the same race as Netflix.
They used HBO Max. I think the thought was, we're going to use the HBO as our brand. Right. The HBO will be the brand that that is exactly what they did. They branded it as HBO. And they figured, well, we already have tens of millions of subscribers to HBO. But the thing is, only 12.6 million people have activated the service, even though we know there are another 20 plus million people that have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that alone tells you that, I mean, these are people that have it. They don't have to pay anything extra. and they can activate it, and they're choosing not to, which is a little scary in that sense. So it tells you that they still haven't broken out of, like, the HBO people are still HBO people. Right. Like, they're not looking at HBO Max. Like, for them, it's like this extra content isn't really doing much for them, mm-hmm. obviously, or else they would have, you know, they would have activated their subscriptions for it. So I don't know. I mean, that's why I'm just thinking, like, as a separate service, you would have been able to service that audience that is maybe an HBO subscriber, but would also pay extra for additional content, especially really good content. As opposed to now, where it's like, even if you have someone that already has HBO, great, they activate your service. Even if they become a lifelong HBO Max subscriber, it's still the same $15. Do you really care if you're Warner Media or AT&T how you're getting that $15?
Yeah, they're only paying for the library of existing HBO content.
Yeah,
at this point, there's nothing really special about it yet. Other than the movies that are being released.
Yeah, and there will be eventually.
They inked the deal with Bad Robot.
Yeah.
But last year to get some content there and have them produce and create some stuff. So there's a lot of stuff on the horizon for them. I'm going to be interested to see how that all rolls out.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, WandaVision drops in a couple of weeks. For Disney Plus, and I am
January 15th.
Couple of weeks. Isn't that 2 weeks?
Well, just about.
Well, today's
isn't that what a couple of weeks means?
I thought today was the 6th. I don't know why.
We're getting there. We're getting there. I know. Before you know it, it's going to be like the end of January.
She's already trying to rush the year.
Yeah. Sorry.
But yeah, WandaVision drops.
Yes.
And I am stoked. Stoked about that. We did not talk about the Loki trailer.
We did briefly.
Can I tell you that I have fallen into that YouTube black hole of, like, theories? People splicing apart scenes, like trailers, things like that. Yo, WandaVision and Loki seem like just
I'm really curious to see what WandaVision ends up being, because I feel like from the two trailers that we saw, there's so many different styles in the show that it's like, how are they going to tie everything together? And, like, what is the show going to look like? Like, you have them kind of like in a modern day setting, but then you have them in this, like, crazy I Love Lucy type of sitcom set.
Yeah, so... So she's essentially creating her own realities.
Yeah, it's nuts. And
somebody theorized that when, you know, they just kind of made this up, like, in Sokovia, she must have watched a lot of, like, you know, U.S. sitcoms. Mm-hmm. And so her brain is formulating these universes off of TV shows that she's seen before in the past.
That's
and
dope.
So every decade, so you have, like, your, it starts in the 60s and it starts with the Bewitched kind of vibe, and then it moves into the 70s, which is excuse me, the oh my god, the Brady Bunch,
mm-hmm.
or 60s or 70s or whatever. And then you've got the Full House vibe in the 90s. And then, so, like, there's a whole lot of stuff that happens.
That's so cool. Yeah.
And then we've caught glimpses of, is it Monica Rambeau? The little girl that's in Captain Marvel that, you know, I don't even know what I'm talking
about. Yeah.
But the little girl, she grows up. Yeah. So she becomes, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Just saying she's part of S.W.O.R.D., which is the new organization that Nick Fury is overseeing in Spider-Man Far From Home. Like, there's a whole lot of shit that's supposedly going to be in WandaVision. So I can't wait to see.
And it's going to tie in supposedly into the Doctor Strange sequel.
Multiverse of Madness. So. And then Spider-Man. And so, I mean, we hardly talk about leaked stuff, but I shared that crazy video with you guys of Tom Holland allegedly in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man costume, which mm-hmm. is like bananas to me. And it's a different style, so it's a new suit. It's not like an older photo. It's right. Like a brand new suit. And it looks like Tom Holland's eyes, but this, I'm like, what's happening? Yeah. This is so crazy. Whoa.
Going, there's going to be fun stuff. I mean, but it, just to kind of go back for a second to Wonder Woman 84, just to kind of tie that up, because
bring all that back.
Yeah. Here's the thing though. Because it does tie into this whole conversation though about streaming and whatnot. And I'm going to go somewhere with this too, because we had a discussion with Tavo, after Wonder Woman 84 was released, and he asked a question, and I wanted to talk about it last week, and we didn't, because we just got caught up in everything else. So this will be a good week to touch on it. But before we do that, Wonder Woman 84, after the second weekend, it dropped. I don't really care about that stuff for now, because it's a different time, right? But it dropped 67% and here 72% worldwide, right? Overseas, rather. It dropped 72%, not worldwide. So it's at 115 million worldwide right now, which tells you, obviously, for a movie that cost 200 million or so to make, and they say about another 100 million or so to market. Again, it's like, really, why did you just not make it premium video on demand? Mm-hmm. I mean, The Croods, the sequel, The Croods 2, whatever it's called, New Age, whatever.
Straight to VOD.
It came out about a month before Wonder Woman, so it's not exactly an apples to apples comparison, but it's a right around the same in worldwide box office number, right? It's about 114, 116 million, something like that. But it's been available on premium on demand. So you know it's making money on top of that,
right?
And it's like, and granted, it also cost a lot less to make. So it's like,
sure.
I just still, for the life of me, cannot understand why they did not capitalize. I know,
and
on
then Nicolas Cage is in that, right?
I think so.
The Croods, and he gets paid in pixie dust. So
right, yeah. It's amazing. It's like, it was such a no brainer, and I don't know why you would leave all that money on the table. It still is amazing to me. No, but that's,
maybe they just didn't want people angry asking for their money back.
No, I mean, listen, there have been worse movies that have been released. Theatrically, but
I was getting COVID for this movie.
Yeah. But no, I just mean like you couldn't release it. That's the thing. Like premium on demand as opposed to giving it away.
No, seriously. If there's a hard $20 for that movie.
Yeah.
We all would have paid for it.
Sure.
100%.
Of course. I would have paid more even for it. Had at the time, not now. But
you know what?
It might have hyped people up too, because you have to pay for something to see it instead of like, oh, it's going to be on all month, I'll just check it out later. You know,
I'm glad you said that, because there's actually an interesting stat. And I was talking to someone the other day about it, because UFC has announced that they're going to be raising their prices for their pay-per-views this year, and actually ESPN Plus is raising its price as well for the annual subscription. And people, when every time pay-per-view prices go up, everyone says, oh, like, this is ridiculous. It has been proven that the highest priced pay-per-views, like for sports, have been the most purchased events.
Yeah.
And it's because I think it does give that feel of like, this is something special, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that there's something to that. Like, if you have to pay for something and, you know, you pay a premium price for it, that it does make it like people will buy it, because it makes it seem like an event, as opposed to just a throwaway.
You will probably also make it an event at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if I had to pay for a movie, I would make sure like my phone is away, or if I had kids, you know, like to take them somewhere, or they're like, you're sitting right here and you're getting your snack. Like, you also end up making your space an event. Then when we watched it, it was just like, all right, yeah, cool. Let's put it on. You know, it's free. So yeah, Chris, like if they would have just charged for it, people would have paid for it. It might have been a bigger event, and I think that's what they wanted.
Yeah.
But they didn't go that route.
I certainly would have paid for it, and it would have been a thing for sure. It would have been a thing where it's like, all right, we paid for it, we've got however much time to watch it, you know, let's put it on. Let's sit down and focus on it. You know, we started it, and Jess was like, okay, this is a little corny. I'm kind of not into this. And so she walked off, and I was like, I got to finish this movie. But yeah, I mean, there was definitely, no urgency in it.
No.
Yeah.
So.
And the reviews have not been, some of the comments and reviews have not been all that stellar. And I know people who have been, even though it's free, not going to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Let's, because this way he doesn't think that it's always going to take us like 100 episodes to answer his questions, because that seems to happen sometimes with that stuff. Dude. But
sorry, Tavo.
Yeah, he actually was really more of a. It was a question, but it wasn't like a. It was more of a topic type of thing, something to, and it was interesting because he asked. He said that he wonders. Or he feels like, after watching Wonder Woman 84, which was interesting, that he's wondering if superheroes, or I guess hero stories, because he actually threw The Mandalorian in there and The Boys as well, which aren't technically, they're not superhero stories. But so hero stories, are they better served now for television or like streaming television, whatever, than they are in movies? And I thought it was really interesting because... My thought on it was that I think it's more about quality and how you use your time. Because his thing was like, well, I just feel like they, you know, television gives you more time to like flesh out characters and to kind of expand the universe. And there's truth to that. But I think if you use your time wisely, you can do that in the context of a movie as well. That's why I thought like Wonder Woman 84 was an interesting example, because that's a film that didn't, in my mind, use its time wisely, right? It kind of rushed through stuff, even though it had time. I do think that in a lot of ways, like we're seeing with Star Wars and stuff like that, like there is great value to having this stuff play out over the course of television seasons. As long as you're going to put the love and the care behind it. Like, look, I mean, The Mandalorian is a high bar, right? There's a lot of – that's a passion project. But I do think that it can lend itself to – I do think this is going to be more of the way that you're going to start to see these hero stories told, with the exception of, like, the super-duper A-list stuff. Right. I know HBO Max, you're going to start to see some more of like the secondary characters. They're going to use that to like introduce those characters for television. We know that Marvel Studios obviously is going to be rolling out a lot of television shows for Star Wars and for Disney, for Marvel stuff. So clearly, you know, The Mandalorian, I think, has really in a lot of ways been a game changer. But it doesn't mean that you still can't make great movies and tell these stories, right? I mean, there have been great superhero and great hero movie stories, you know, for years, and I don't think that that's over. I just think it's a matter of quality, managing time, and choosing the right stories to tell in movies versus television.
Yeah, I'm gonna say I felt like, and I felt this immediately after I watched Wonder Woman, I felt like that movie was made for the big screen. And I feel like a lot of the problems that people have with the story or the pacing it's more prevalent when you're watching it on a small screen than if you had seen it in a theater. I think like anything with like action scenes or these like larger than life characters or just, you know, big, like not even fight scenes, but like action, you know, just superhero films really lend themselves well to the big screen. You are completely immersed in that story, in that world. I think the opening scene of Wonder Woman would have felt different and looked different on a big screen than watching it at home. And I think more of the mistakes in the story and the timing of it, the storytelling, you're going to notice it more on a small screen. Mm. So to answer Tavo's question, I think if we are not going to be, let's say we're not going to spend another year going to movies and theaters, something like Mandalorian or like these other, like WandaVision and these other shows that are coming out over episodes have a longer time to craft their story, and they're going to do really well. but to just put a event film out on a small screen, hey, my TV's not that big. Maybe that's why. Maybe I need like a huge TV. But for people that don't have it, you're going to notice those differences. I think I probably would have enjoyed Wonder Woman more if I had seen it in a theater, just with the noises and the sound, and like you feel like you're like in something, you know? And maybe that was one of the reasons it disconnected with audiences.
Yeah. I mean, I think too, it's what you expect from your movie. So like, I think that because of the MCU and the way they tell their stories, right? And now because of like these streaming shows, and again, The Mandalorian is something that everybody's fallen in love with, and especially when it's coming on the heels of a kind of a messy trilogy of films that narratively fell apart. I think that it's, you said event film, and I think that you have to go into a movie. You're not going to expect the long form storytelling that you're going to be able to get on a television show in movies. It just can't, they're not, it's not the same viewing experience, right? So just like you're not going to be able to get a Star Wars film that's going to be able to tell a story the way The Mandalorian tells its story.
Get that. The Mandalorian is there's not a lot of action scenes. You know, I think in the grand scheme, there's not a lot of like there are action scenes.
Every episode has a moment.
Has an action blip. Right, but it's a lot of storytelling.
It is like, a lot of like storytelling
in terms of scenes.
But if you were to stitch all of those episodes together, it's a 4-hour movie.
Yeah,
which, you know, if you were to compare it, and it's not an apples to apples thing, but if you were to compare it to Wonder Woman, there was a lot more fluff in a shorter period of time than you would have gotten in 4 hours of The Mandalorian.
No, absolutely.
Like there's a lot, like everything in The Mandalorian happens for a reason, and it all connects to get our hero to another place and push them along their journey, where I felt like Wonder Woman 84, like, man, we're going to throw this over here and there's no payoff. I think you both have a point. Like I agree. I think the epicness of Wonder Woman, like specifically the moment where she's flying and all that, is probably a grand moment in the theater to see. That being said, there are many films that I've seen at home, John Wick 3, for example, and I was like hooting and like flipping my chair over, so excited to see, like, I don't know, crazy dogs and just the action, all of that stuff. And I didn't see it in the theater. Like, I just thought it was good. And the sound was great. Like, I'm like, you know, he's doing his thing, he's fighting, and I'm on the edge of my seat, like, he's going to break his arm. He stabs him in the eye, you know, and I'm like losing my mind over that stuff. So I don't. Again, that's not an apples to apples thing either, because I don't think John Wick is an event film. Like, Wonder Woman.
No, I'm just saying, I think. Because when you're watching in a theater, those like action-y scenes, not John Wick, I mean, that is highly choreographed, you know, fight scenes. That's going to look good anywhere just because of the content of how it's choreographed. But like you said, like when Wonder Woman's like flying or the first scene, you're going to get lost in that because it's so big up on the screen. That I think that will end up distracting you from the fundamental story flaws that the movie has. You might not notice it as much in a theater when you're distracted by all the sound and all like the magic that's happening in front of you on the screen. Yeah. But when you're watching it at home and you don't have all of that, there's no smoke and mirrors anymore.
Yeah.
Everyone notices the flaws because you're not distracted by these loud noises and this extra large picture that's in front of you that makes it seem like, wow, this is so cool. But really, like I said last week, it's hollow. There's nothing to it. It's smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, well,
and they just stitch all of those together.
And that's kind of what I was getting at, because Tavo's general point was more like not – like, so say, like, taking a movie, right, like Wonder Woman 84 and watching it on a, like, should they just be on streaming service? It was more like the storytelling. Episodic. Like, would we be better off if, like, Wonder Woman was not told in the context of a movie, just if she had a show, you know, where we could live with these characters? And, like, your Mandalorian thing from before, Aaron, like, there are things in The Mandalorian that would probably look even better on a big screen. Oh, but 100%. There are things you wouldn't be able to do if it was a movie. Yeah. Right, like, yeah. You wouldn't be able to introduce Ahsoka Tano out of nowhere, you know, 100%. Just to get in. You're right. You wouldn't be able to introduce half of these characters, like the Mayfeld thing. That wouldn't pay off the same way in a context of a movie as it would in the as opposed to like context of a show.
To bring this back to like one of our earliest conversations about Obi-Wan Kenobi. I mean, this to me is the quandary of bringing him back in general. Like, you can't just do a movie because it's too small for him. You need to drag out a little bit of the what has he been doing. If you're going to do something about Obi-Wan Kenobi, you have to give him that time to breathe.
Yeah.
And I think the episodic format allows us to do that and expand more on the hero. I don't necessarily think that only for superheroes do we need, you know, a movie or an episode thing. Like, I feel like we're getting into an interesting place where B characters are getting a little bit more shine because they're going to get the episodic treatment. And if we are big, you know, our big boys, you're going to get a big event film. That being said, like, I don't know, Wonder Woman as a TV show? Maybe?
Sure, why not?
But then here's then you run the risk of like the villain of the week thing, and then that gets really stale.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So like that's the slippery slope. I feel like when we get into that stuff, I feel like it works well when you have a hero that story is either compact or is adding something like to a universe. And I'm not saying that. And she is part of a universe. I'm sorry. I'm thinking out loud here. I don't think that Wonder Woman would work in the episodic treatment.
I think the fact that Disney has ordered so many series, kind of shows you what audiences want in terms of storytelling. I think
what they think they want.
Yeah. Sure, but overall, I think we have evolved as television or movie viewing audience to go more psychologically in depth with our characters than ever before. And I just think that's the evolution of viewership and how we tell stories in a very, like, you know, foundational sense. Where back in the day, you would have a movie and people would come home and watch sitcoms. They would watch situational comedies. And now we barely watch sitcoms, but we're watching all of these like deep shows that have concepts and relationships, and that's what we're filling our brains with every day. So I just think it's a natural progression of audienceship, and that's why maybe movies aren't doing it for a lot of people anymore, because you need to fall into that like first act, second act, third act, you know, what's the climb to the climax. There is a kind of formula that they use. Unless you're making like a crazy movie, right? But like that comes once in a while, you know, unless you're making like a Requiem for a Dream or whatever. But even within those like stories, there's only actually what do they say? Like 10 stories out there, and they just recycle themselves. But what people are more interested in, I feel like, is, okay, within those 10 stories, an episodic show with 10 episodes, I can really go in depth and like get into this person's life.
Yeah.
And now we're moving away from tropes, right? We're moving away from A characters where it's like, oh, it's always about the popular person or the person that has it all. Now it's like, who are these other side characters? Because we also as a society are connecting more to people and different types of people. So naturally the way we tell stories are going to evolve.
I'm so glad you said that we're becoming like more sophisticated when it comes to stuff, and because I feel like that was one of the biggest issues with Wonder Woman 84 is it patronized a lot of us. It wasn't structured appropriately for where we want to you know, or how we were consuming content. And, you know, it's interesting because you're, I think I was thinking about while you were talking about characters like the Punisher, who had attempts in the theaters and failed epically, but in my mind succeeded because you were able to dive deeper into the psychology of that character, where a movie maybe in the right hands of somebody could have made something nice, but it worked really well. Daredevil is another great example.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I'm not saying that those things don't work. I think it depends on the character. Like a Batman show, like a legit, yeah, that could probably work.
Sure.
It's worked for many years, you know, yeah. Animated.
Yep. And there's enough of a universe there with all of sure. that rogue, the rogues gallery and the way it's structured.
You but can it's create how it's executed.
Yeah. Well, I would, that's, well, that and was my original point.
And that's
yeah.
the point.
Yeah, it's all well, about execution.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
and like you said, Aaron, we're now focused on more of like the B characters.
Yeah.
That's why we're kind of like, no, we don't want a Batman series or we don't want a Wonder Woman series. They've been in the spotlight for so long. That's why like the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, like that's interesting, you yeah. know, because we want to see more of them.
All of that. All of
and,
that. Stuff.
And that's why you feel the same way about the Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yeah. You know, show that's coming out. It's like they've had their spotlight. Audiences are now interested in like, what else is there? What other characters can we delve into that we yeah. don't know about that you can teach us about or add to their mythology if yeah. you don't read the comic books?
Like, I'm sure the Batman is going to be a great film in theaters, right? But we already know that that is going to be an episodic story. There's going to be a couple of chapters in yeah. Robert Pattinson's portrayal of Batman. So there will naturally be a build there. And I think that's what gets me excited about that. It's like, I know I'm not just going to see a one and done kind of thing, and we're going to get a little more there. And I was hoping that that would be the case for Wonder Woman 84. First chapter is amazing. Second chapter, not so much.
Right.
And it was all in the execution. It's not that it couldn't have worked because movies are going to be episodic anyways because we are stacking sequels up like it's going out of style. So you've got audiences in seats for roughly 2 hours. Like, you better tell a very good and tight story because yeah. you will lose them in the first 15 to 20 minutes if you don't, because we're so used to watching TV in that sort of format yeah. where like the first yeah. 5 minutes, boom, we're sucked. In, we're ready to go. We're like, okay, we're dialed in.
Yeah, and Wonder
so
Woman 84.
We've evolved, I think.
Wonder Woman 84, we have, and that's why I think, and that's kind of, I think, what the inspiration was for Tavo saying that. It's because Wonder Woman 84 sticks out like a sore thumb in a lot of ways. And I'm not even talking about quality, right? Good film, bad film, otherwise. It doesn't matter. It's just the narrative structure was almost like a bizarre throwback to a different time of mm-hmm. superhero or hero storytelling, right? To where it was not a lot of thought was put to the villains. Like, they had their most basic motivations, right? Like, these shallow kind of basic motivations, and it's not fully developed. Like, they just needed to be bad because you have to have bad guys. So they become bad very quickly. And then, you know, you have your hero that saves the day. Like, that's a form of hero storytelling that we haven't seen a lot of now, right? We have gotten a little bit, even in the films maybe that we didn't necessarily like or agree with, like, there is a little bit more to them now, right? And Wonder Woman 84 didn't seem to be building to anything in particular either, right? Which yeah. is also different from what we're used to. Like, mm-hmm. that movie leaves off in a place where you're like, all right, kind of just like yeah. it ended. Like, all right, so we're probably not going to see a lot of these people again. Maybe we will, maybe we won't, but like, whatever. Like, it was really, and I think that's what's maybe throwing some people, because we have evolved, and the way we consume stories and look at stories, and even short form, long form, it doesn't matter. Like, it did seem out of place, and the tone was very different. And I think that's why you know.
If this came out maybe 10 years ago, you know,
yeah.
we might have felt different about it. but
you're 100%, no. You're 100% right. Now, I forgot about the fact that it doesn't leave all, it doesn't lead us to anything else.
No. And now that we're talking about it, I can't tell you how many times now I find myself within the last, I don't know, 5 years where I'm like watching a show with Alex and I'm like, watch, this is going to happen.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
You know, or like this is, and not even like, watch, he's going to die. I'm like, watch, this is going to happen because she's going to think this and he's going to think that. Like you already map out the whole story in your head, because I just think we're just watching so much more content that it's going to take a lot to get us to try. We're going to always try and get ahead of the story. And in good storytelling, they always tell you, you got to make it a mystery. The audience has to try and solve the mystery with you. And that's what keeps them engaged, because they want to find out what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. Once they know what's going to happen, or they don't care what's going to happen next, you've already lost your audience, and therefore your story is not that good. I mean, that's what they teach you in screenwriting.
So it's so funny you said that, because I do the same thing at home. It annoys the shit out of Jess. But I think that there's a couple of different personalities that watch TV. I think you and I are very similar that way, and I think we are, because we're in this, that our brains automatically start doing that. Whereas like Jess, I don't know if Alex is like this, but Jess just wants to see something. She wants to go on the ride, and she like checks her brain to the door and just watches. Mm-hmm. Where I am more of like a mentally engaged, you know, or
I'm the same way.
Like I ruin movies for people because I'll walk by, I'll catch 5 minutes of it, and I'll be like, yeah, that person's gonna die before the end of this. Mm-hmm. This person's gonna do it. And they're like, Aaron, can you shut up? Like, that's not gonna happen. And then I'll come back later when the movie's over and they're like, dude,
yeah,
you ruined it.
Yeah.
You knew exactly what was gonna happen. Like
We both do it and make bets. Oh. So we're the worst type. Mm. He's like, nah, that's not. I'm like, I'll bet you $5. And then we'll start betting on stuff. Or like, you have to run around the block or something that's like so that. Funny. Yeah.
That's so funny. I've ruined Lifetime movies are so bad. Well, my
that's not true.
My mother-in-law, when she comes over and stays, like they'll watch it. They'll watch a movie. And I forgot what movie was so bad. I was like, oh, the dude that hit her with the car is her husband, but that's not really her husband. That's somebody. And they were like, dude, where are you getting this stuff from? I'm like, just watch. By the end of it, they were like, yo, did you watch that movie before? I'm like, no, I got it though. It's so, you know,
those so Lifetime movies are the most formulaic movies. Yeah. I have a friend who's an actress in Vancouver. She just filmed a Hallmark or a Lifetime movie. Mm-hmm. But she auditions for them all the time. And recently I've been her reader. So every week she'll send me like a new script, but it's like the same thing. And I'll be like, oh, let me guess what happens. And she'll be like, yep, that's exactly what happens. She's always playing like the quirky best friend. And that's kind of like the realm that she's gotten into. Yeah. So we craft her experience based on that. Because I'm like, no, you're the quirky best friend. Like you kind of have to like camp it up a little bit. You can't, because she's actually a leading girl. But she gets pushed into these supporting roles because she's not white.
Yeah.
And you know, in these Hallmark Lifetime movies, it's all like the blonde like the brunette, you know, who's like white, and then the mixed Asian quirky friend who has like, you know, big hair and like an attitude. She's always gonna be there. So I'm like, no, you gotta like be a little quirky.
Yeah, but the fast talking Asian, right? Yeah, come on.
But that's how it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
I mean, those movies are, they're, it's no different than any other like cookie cutter kind of mass market, anything. I mean, music, it's like, you know, pop music where you have like, you know, they call them like your hack songwriters, right? Where they just crank out hit song after hit song for 10 different artists. They all the songs sound the same. They all follow the same formula. You can hear one person sing that song and then another person sing another song by that same songwriter, and you would know, oh, that's written by the same person. They're not even writing to a particular artist, right? They're writing a song, and then someone hears it and says, oh, I want to do that song. So it sounds like the same voice, even though it's, you know, someone else is singing it. So it's the same thing. I mean, that's what those Lifetime movies are, right? They're just safe. Trash. Like, it's cookie cutter stuff. It's following the same formula. Insert different cast. And because again, it's that whole like easy to watch thing. You know, they're easy to watch because
yeah, check your brain at the door.
That's it. Like,
you know, the ending is always going to be like a good ending.
And so that, and so here's the thing. So that going back to Wonder Woman 84, that is the problem. There were no stakes.
Yeah.
At all. Like, we knew that Steve Trevor had to go and he was going to go. The moment he popped up, we're like, he's going to be gone.
Well, the moment they popped up the way he did, you knew
they're like, you're in someone else's body, dude. You're going to have to give that up. That's the other part, too. The moment they introduced Maxwell Lord's son, endearing quality, he's going to be fine.
Sure.
Cheetah, misunderstood villain, you'll be fine.
Right.
Everybody walks out of that unscathed, pretty much. That entire
movie. No stakes.
Nothing.
That's why I say it's also, in a lot of ways, it was a throwback to a time when, like, villains didn't die, right, for the most part in these movies. They wind up, you know, wherever they wind up. We don't even know where these villains wound up at the end of this movie. But, like, it was just – and for people who said, like, oh, the stakes were too high, maybe at the end of the first Wonder Woman, it was
It was a war.
I mean, Wonder Woman, and Wonder Woman to me is on the level of like Superman. So like, I don't see why Wonder Woman shouldn't have the same world saving finales that that Superman would have or whatever, right?
Yo, so Superman can cut people in half with his eyes, right? And then they just take Wonder Woman's sword away. They're like, here's your rope, here's your super long belt.
So I think that was part of it too. Sorry. Was that that's what also made it that throwback. There were no, it was no serious stakes. It was way too lighthearted. Shot,
but it's like, look at, it's just someone.
Look at my sexy shoulder.
No, it was like somebody just spilled grape jam on my shoulder. Damn it.
Alex says he doesn't buy her as Wonder Woman. He's like, she's like a supermodel.
Oh, well, I buy her as Wonder Woman. I think she's great.
No,
and I was
like, oh no, but
in the first movie, she is Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Like,
but in this one, he's like, she just seems like she's this like supermodel. Yeah, they didn't give her all the scenes. She's like smiling, you know, and being charming.
Well,
and
even the scene where she's shot and she's like beaten up and she was crying and like, you know, she's messed up. And the moment she says goodbye to him, she goes for her little run. It literally was like her makeup comes back. Her hair is like, like gets real curly again, and she starts doing her little Barbie run, right, with her 90-degree angle arms. And I'm like, "What the?"
That was supposed to be like, well, she renounced her wish, so like. Like all of that suffer, like all of the things, like the Keith, she was healing, like her body was healing itself.
But she was
like,
still crying her eyes.
Listen, it was just
that goodbye moment.
That whole thing was Jesus.
Diana,
I'll always love you from the alleyway.
Patty Jenkins, we have evolved. Do better.
You better do better. You start touching my franchise, we gonna have a problem.
Uh oh.
Don't let me start some Sith.
So here's the thing. So I know that we all think that The Mandalorian has changed Star Wars, like the fortunes of Star Wars, but we have yet, you know, from a theatrical perspective, do we think, based on the history, right, of Star Wars under Kathleen Kennedy, does Patty Jenkins ultimately wind up the director of that movie?
She gets fired. Can you imagine? I mean, that's just how it goes these days.
I mean, right? The last time she tried to make a film she was hired to make a film for like a Disney creative property, she left due to creative differences. That was what turned out to be Thor: The Dark World. And then she, you know, did Wonder Woman, which was amazing, obviously. And now she did this one, not so amazing. And then now she's working on this. But we've seen so far there have not been a lot of theatrical Star Wars movies that where the director that was originally supposed to direct the film was the director that
either
finished the film or because, you know, you think about it, right? I mean, Colin Trevorrow was supposed to direct the third.
Lord and Miller.
In the sequel trilogy, Lord and Miller were the original directors of Solo. They got thrown off in the middle of filming, right? Replaced.
Josh Trank.
Gareth Edwards was still the build director, right? So at least Lord and Miller, Ron Howard was the build director of Solo, right? He took over. I guess he directed enough. Mm-hmm. He added enough. But we know that Gareth Edwards did not finish Rogue One, or at least it wasn't his final version. Wasn't his version of the film that we saw. There was a lot of reshoots there, but not enough to make Terry Gilroy the build director of that movie. But yeah, I mean, Josh Trank was supposed to direct a Boba Fett movie that never happened.
James Mangold was supposed to direct a Boba Fett movie.
James Mangold was direct. So, like, there has not been a lot of, like, directors have not fared well so far under Kathleen Kennedy from a theatrical perspective. So maybe, I don't know how this will work out, but hopefully it
works
out. We'll see.
But what a great question from Tavo.
Yeah,
I mean, it's amazing that a movie like Wonder Woman 84, which is really not, it's a very shallow film, would elicit as much conversation as it has, because it, I just think, because it is so different from what we're used
to. It's like the first movie we've seen.
That too.
Other than...
we were all like built up.
I mean, there's a couple of things, right? So it's the first blockbuster event film that gets released on a streaming service. It is the second outing for a beloved film, right? It is the next installment of the newly improved DC universe, or whatever they're calling it these days, and it just underdelivered. You know, it really did, and it's a shame, because I feel like the first movie, which was, you know, different writers, different era, but still felt fresh enough and out of the shadow of some of the things that were happening with BVS and all of that. It was a blessing, and it was a comfort. It was a sort of grounding moment film where you're like, okay, somebody over there knows what they're doing, because they nailed that character. To see that just get diminished and her take a back seat to some of the villains and.
That just goes to show you that you have two films, same director, but one beloved. This one didn't really meet its standards, the story is the foundation. The story is the foundation. She just had a good product to work with. Yeah. You know, and she might be really good at directing actors, which is totally different than writing a story and then directing. So she kind of maybe should stick to directing and not crafting stories.
It's possible. I mean, because like you said, two films, same director, but they don't even feel like they were directed by the same person. Like they're just completely different feels, and you would assume the writers must have something to do with that, but the director does have something to do with it too, because it doesn't look like the same.
The action film. Sequences,
the action
totally
sequences
different.
Aren't the same. The themes aren't the same. So there was a lot to this. That
different
team. The same.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, there's all right. There, well, yeah. I mean, there's one moment where, Steve. This is the first Wonder Woman. Steve's on the beach. And he sees all the Amazonians going to war against the Nazis. And they do that thing with the shield.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They launch one of them up, and she ends up getting behind the line and shooting her arrows. Dope scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was no moment where I thought to myself, okay, that's going to pop back up. When they're in the mix and they're in that village and there's that sniper up at the bell tower and he's like, Diana... Shield, he calls it out and all of a sudden I remember seeing that scene in the theaters going like, holy shit, like that dude just remembered, and he's speaking her language because she knows exactly what he's asking her to do, and they all get under there and they launch her ass up and she ends up blowing up that entire clock tower. That's a dope moment. That moment is so cool, and there's so many more of those in that movie. There isn't one of those moments in Wonder Woman 84.
No,
and that sucks. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
So, on that note, we'll get out of here.
And we thought we had nothing to talk about tonight.
Oh, there's always something to talk about, right? Imagine what happens when we actually have stuff to talk about, like soon, hopefully.
I want to know why Mandalorian Gallery only had one episode.
Yeah, I was surprised that there's not... Yeah. I thought they'd give us like a Luke one. since they didn't touch on that at all.
I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Maybe the holidays?
Maybe.
Maybe the holidays?
But, yeah, maybe.
A lot of stuff going on.
I don't know. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. So, of course, go to thefanboygarage.com. You can check out our episodes. You can check out our merch. And of course, you could join the conversation on the social medias, the Facebook, the Instagram, the Twitters at the Fanboy Garage. And of course, if you want to watch us as well as listen to us, you can go to the Fanboy Garage podcast on YouTube and subscribe and like the episodes and all that fun stuff. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
You guys can tweet me at @banana_TFG.
And you can find me on Twitter at @AAronSpeaks. That is @A_A_RonSpeaks. Thank you again so much for listening to episode 127 of the Fanboy Garage. We will catch you guys next week. Laters.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.